We'll do some freelancing today on Scribble.
Welcome to Scribble, 30 minutes of conversation, comments, and reviews on reading and writing, editing, publishing, and selling books. I'm Roald Tweet.
And I'm Don Wooten. Josh Bolter is a freelance writer aiming at TV production. We'll chat with him today on Scribble. Freelancing has to be a precarious profession, doesn't it?
Absolutely.
So why did you decide to become a freelance writer?
Well, I've had a long corporate career, and primarily as a writer, writing everything from speeches for VPs to software manuals, that sort of thing. It was never very creatively fulfilling. But the other thing in 2019, 2020, really the last 10 years, is a corporate career is not the safe career that it used to be either. I went to work for Chicago Title and Trust. That was a company that existed for 200 plus years that saved the city after the fire, right? Because of the records. That company, you know, it went under like every other company does these days. So the safe corporate job is almost as precarious as freelancing.
Well, that's why did you choose that?
Because I had an English degree and had to make a living. That's basically it.
Well, you could always teach school.
I probably would have taught school, except that my parents were public school teachers. My mom taught English. My dad was a band teacher, and I saw the stacks of papers my mom would have to grade every night or every couple nights, and the amount of hours you put in outside of school. Even though you do get the summers off, they really put in a lot of hours, and it's a stressful job.
My colleague, I ended up teaching school too. One of my colleagues figured out that if he had added together all the remarks he made on all the student themes he corrected, he would have 7 or 8 novels.
Sure, yes, I don't doubt it.
And instead, he had nothing except nice try, bad.
Well, you know, you could be a teacher like Tweet. I can't think of a cushier job. Isn't that true, Tweet?
I have to say, it's not a bad way of... High school is...
Oh, high school.
...is work.
That's tough.
College
I've taught
teaching
high
is,
school.
Yeah. And grade school is worse, but... So, did being in a writer before give you an in into being a freelance writer, or...?
Not really, no. The corporate world and the freelance world are completely different.
In what way?
It's like anything else. You have to have connections and get to know people. So you're building up, depending on what you're doing, you're building up relationships with people. And that's kind of what it's about.
How are you doing? I mean, there are a lot of people listening to this program that are really interested in the process by which you become that, because a lot of people like to write, but...
Yeah, getting published is another story.
So it's connections.
It's connections. It's getting to know the people in whichever industry you're trying to get published in. The publishing world is completely different. The New York publishing world is completely different than whatever local publishing world you're in, whether that's writing for magazines or newspapers here in the Quad Cities or trying to get a novel published in New York. TV production is pretty much Los Angeles. So if you want to do that, I go out to LA a few times a year and try and build relationships there. It's not ideal to not be there and try and do that kind of work.
By build relationships, you mean invite somebody to lunch, or?
I do that. I send cold emails, cold calls to people, production companies, and say, hey, can you check out my work? And 99% of the time, I get no response or a no, I don't want to read your work kind of thing. And that 1%, they'll say, yeah, I'll read something. And out of that 1%, another 10% will actually like your work enough to say, hey, you know, let's get coffee or come to my office on the lot in LA and we'll talk.
The whole business of writing freelance, I noticed that that seemed to have brought you to being a guest columnist in the local paper. Is that a good venue for you?
It is. I enjoy it quite a bit. I wrote a column. We moved here from Central Kentucky. My partner was a teacher at a professor at Center College in Kentucky, and that's why we ended up in the Quad Cities. She's at Augustana now. And I had a job as a marketing director for an arts center while we were there, and I wrote a weekly column for the daily paper, the Advocate Messenger in Central Kentucky. And it's a good outlet for me. I like to do the sort of humorous types of columns, so that kind of plays into my skills as a writer.
Well, your savage attack on pizzas, I don't know.
Yes, that was my first column, and I got a lot of response to that.
Well, that's good.
It's not all of it happy.
Being in a newspaper paints a target on you, I'll tell
yes.
you.
I know, but a response is a response, right?
Oh, that's what people don't know. When they write letters, frothing, angry letters to the editor, that is a plus. That means they read it, and that's
sure.
all that counts. The reaction is as important as the fact that they read it.
Well, even Dave Barry, he's about as successful a humor columnist as you can find in America, maybe the most successful ever, or at least in the last 100 years.
Yes.
He and of course he doesn't write the weekly column anymore, but he said that he would get hate mail every week. And if he didn't get enough hate mail, he thought, well, I just didn't write a very good column that week.
I had a chance to have lunch with him, dinner actually, and I was terribly late for it, but he waited patiently. And I found that talking to him, his adolescent persona that he presents in the column is pretty much genuine.
Is that right?
Yeah.
Yes.
He's a sharp fellow, but he very much lives that kind of life, the one that he writes about.
Well, it certainly comes across in his writing, that's for sure.
Oh, yeah, and very, very successful. What caught my attention in your column was you're talking about TV production. Are you aiming at that?
I am. I'm doing a variety of writing. I just finished the first draft of a novel, although that was born out of a screenplay I had written. So I'm setting my sights kind of broadly, and it's not I just have a variety of interests. So I have these stories I want to tell. Sometimes I feel like the format is better as a novel. Sometimes it's better as a TV show. I did TV production for Kentucky Educational Television, which is Kentucky's PBS affiliate. It's similar to Iowa Public TV in that it covers the whole state. So I wrote and produced on some pieces for them. So I'm continuing to go to Los Angeles and take meetings there, but I'm also looking at local mm-hmm. PBS type of shows.
Oh, that's very interesting that you range around. Can you settle on one thing, or is it important to try different venues?
Well, I mean, I guess that depends on the person. For me, it's important to try different venues. If one of those things took off and became wildly successful, then I guess that's what I would stick with as long as it stayed successful. I'm sure J.K. Rowling had, a number of adult novels she wanted to write. But once, Harry Potter became Harry Potter, that was right. her thing for a couple decades.
Yeah, that's for sure. When you write, you say you wrote a novel. How long did it take you?
Well, it took me about 5 weeks to write a first draft, but I will say that's a very rough draft. And I will say it's also based on a screenplay I wrote 5-6 years ago, and that screenplay had been through probably 25 drafts. So it's a story I've written over and over again. I was working off basically a 110-page outline. So it wasn't as if I wrote a lot of new material, but at the same time, I had this 103-page story beat out. I knew what was going to happen chapter by chapter before I sat down. So that's not typical. If you're writing a novel from scratch and you do it in 5 weeks, that's pretty astounding.
So do you need an agent now to peddle this novel? Or
I do. I just talked to a friend of mine in New York who works for a publisher. He's an editor. and he's going to read it and give me notes. Okay. And he's, if he likes it, presumably, then he's going to help recommend an agent. I don't know that world, the New York publishing world, that well. But yes, you basically need an agent to sell.
But, you know, even if you get an agent and you get a publisher, the returns on writing novels are so slim these days.
Sure.
Unless, of course, you hit a blockbuster. And once you get to that, then you can write anything and it'll be a bestseller. But that blockbuster is what will carry you along. What are the odds of that?
I have no idea. And it's probably better that way. I do know that even most people who write bestsellers, they it's not like they can retire off those bestsellers. You have the rare blockbuster, like we just mentioned, J.K. Rowling. You have that rare author, but people get on the New York Times bestseller list, and they're still making a middle class living. They're not rich and famous.
Yeah, I read someplace last year that the average poetry book by somebody like Mary Oliver, who's fantastic, is a little over 2,000 copies.
Yeah.
Which isn't a lot.
I remember a hilarious column Dave Barry wrote. I think I mentioned it before, talking about writing and saying, well, you know, poetry, they are the ones who account for 80% of the profits that are made, and they all have private airplanes and so on. If you know anything about poetry, you know, it was hilarious.
Yeah.
But it's true that there's so many books being written today. It sounds like you're up against some long odds there, Josh.
I am indeed. But people say this about writing, but they say it about any kind of profession like that, whether you're trying to be a violinist with the New York Phil or something of that sort. The odds are against you, and if you can do anything else, then you should probably quit and do that other thing. If you just can't quit, then you just have to keep going. That's all you can do. You know, I write almost every day. I've quit multiple times throughout my life, but I just keep coming back to it. It's who I am, and to my core as a storyteller.
Well, so, I guess you do what you should do.
So when you describe yourself as a freelance writer, is this you've been talking pretty much fiction? Is it, or do you do articles on Love After 50 or, you know, and send it into Women's Day or something?
I haven't thought of that. Maybe I should check out the Women's Day market. I would write freelance articles if those options become available, sure. I've done, like I said, I did the corporate writing for a long time, writing speeches, writing software manuals, writing articles for websites, that sort of thing. I will do that kind of work. I don't have the same passion for it, but it's a skill level, you know, any competent writer can do that sort of thing.
I've often thought, you know, there are a lot of organizations that have letters written for executives or for promotion. I look at them and I think, you know, I could do a better job on this than this letter.
Sure.
Does that inspire you to contact corporations and tell them?
I haven't really thought of that. I do hear that you read something that is not all that inspiring and think, I can do better than that. Certainly that was one of the, I was, the first time I thought about writing for television, I was, it's this kind of crazy dream, right? You know, that's Hollywood, that's LA. I'm a Midwestern kid. I'm from the Detroit area. And you kind of think, I can't do that. You know, that's this whole other world for special people. But then, you know, you read a few scripts, you see some things that are not all that well written. You think, actually, I can do that.
Well, you know, I've told this before. When I first entered the Illinois Senate, your first thought is, how did I ever get here? When you've been there for 6 weeks, you think, how did these other people get here?
Sure.
So, you know, there's always room if you can find a way to wedge in. But, of course, that's the whole business and everything is trying to find a way in. Do you keep up contacts in the business world at all, or is that a closed door?
Well, I bounced around geographically quite a bit. So I still talk to people, but I was in the Detroit area for several years. We were in Maine for 2 years, then in Kentucky for several years, and now we're in Illinois. So those contacts, you know, in the Detroit area are not necessarily as useful. They want somebody local. So for those kinds of gigs, it's not that useful to me anymore.
But in this world of the internet, you know, you can be anywhere.
You can. But a lot of people still, they want to meet face to face. And I mean, it's the reason I have to go to LA, you know, a few times a year and talk to people. They will exchange emails, have phone calls, all of that. But people want to see you and talk to you face to face.
What occasions those visits out there? Do you call ahead and set up appointments?
Yes. Usually it'll be around something new. So for example, I just finished a new television pilot, a half hour comedy. So I'm going to start emailing that to my contacts who like to read my stuff. I'm going to try and make some new contacts, and then I'll probably try and set up a trip in a couple months after people start reading it and try and get that out there.
Well, you could always write stuff for Tweet. You could write a Rock Island Lines for you, Tweet.
Have you checked out any of the local documentary film companies?
I've started to do that. We have not been here that long. We've been here a few months. We got here late in the summer, and the first couple months we're here, we bought a house. So I always tell people the first couple months, all I saw in the Quad Cities was Lowe's.
Right.
every day, back to pick up lumber and tools and right. caulk and... So I started to do that, but I have not done it in depth yet.
They're an amazing, there are four film companies in the Quad Cities that
get
huge grants for the documentaries they make, including the one at Augie. Do you know those people? D-Film?
I've talked to D-Films, and I just talked to Fresh Films, exchange emails from them.
Right.
So we're going to meet in the new year and chat. Cool.
Well, you can do a documentary on the Genesee Guild. It's been around for, 64 years now?
My goodness. Put on more Greek plays than any other spot in the
Is that right?
In the United States.
It's the only place.
There's a documentary for you.
Yeah.
he founded it in 1956. It's going strong. You've been here through a summer.
We haven't yet.
Free theater in the park.
Okay. Yeah. I would love to see that.
That would make a spectacular documentary, I think.
Yeah, well, it's I just grabbing at straws here, Josh. Be careful.
No, WQPT would. I mean, talk to them about it.
Yeah, but anyway, do you do some writing every day, regardless, or?
Most days I do. I try and do a couple hours a day. Sometimes more, sometimes less, depending on what I'm doing.
Does that follow a pattern, or do you follow your fancy? We get an idea and you start writing.
I do better if I follow a strict schedule with, you know, routines. I used to think I could just write, you know, when I was inspired, but then you just don't write.
Talk to me about it, right?
I mean, it's... Yeah.
There's a prime example.
Well, it's already Thursday. On Monday, I'm really going to start.
Sure.
On Monday, I broke my pencil, so I can't do it until Tuesday, and then pretty soon it's Thursday again. And, you know, I could not survive as a freelance writer. I just am not that disciplined.
Well, I can't survive because I have that habit and exercise. Start out on a Monday, do the whole routine. This is it. And on Tuesday, well, something gets in the way.
Yeah.
And it's easy to lose track of that schedule.
Well, that's why I try and write in the mornings, and it works for me in a few ways. One, it's if I consider it the most important work I do throughout the day is the writing, then I have to make that the priority and make it the first thing I do. But the second thing for me is I'm not a morning person. I don't like mornings. So I may as well just get into writing instead of having phone conversations or talking to people who, you know... So,
I'm with you there. Well, anyway, Josh, it's interesting that you are at this point in your life and you're pushing into new areas. But when you get some stuff back on your novel, that'll be kind of a pivotal thing for you, won't it?
I think so. I'm super excited about it. The screenplay, actually, it was, I can't talk too much about it story-wise, but the screenplay did really well. A lot of executives were interested in it. The feedback I kept hearing about the screenplay was, that's a $100 million movie, budget-wise. Hollywood doesn't make $100 million movies based on new material anymore. It's everything is Star Wars or Disney or Marvel. Right. If it doesn't already exist in the world, they're not making a new property. So it kind of falls outside of that. So that was one of the reasons I thought, well, maybe this should be a novel, because then it becomes the existing property. So I'm kind of writing my own.
Yeah.
I hate this phrase, but IP, intellectual property. I'm making my own intellectual property.
If the novel hits, you're ready for a screen adaptation.
Exactly.
Well, Josh Bolter, thank you very much for spending time with us today. On what schedule does your column in the newspaper follow? Once a month?
Once a month, yes.
Okay. Well, we'll keep an eye out for it. Josh Bolters, a freelance writer, is our guest today. And once again, thanks for visiting.
Thank you for having me.
Roel, do you keep things in the book bag for a long time?
I have things that I've been mentioning or thinking of mentioning for a year now that I still intend to mention when we have a little time, but they're not on the top burner.
The reason I ask that is because I had recourse to a book on the future of the Catholic Church with Pope Francis, which was written about 4 or 5 years ago by Gary Wills. And I think he is probably one of this nation's leading intellectuals, a polymath who can translate his own Greek, Hebrew, and Latin. He attended a seminary for a while. But he has written books that deal with religion and with the Catholic Church especially. But he's also written some wonderfully insightful books about theater and various aspects of public life.
Yeah, he's amazing.
Yeah, the guy can do just anything. But 5 years ago, he wrote this book about the future of the Catholic Church with Pope Francis. And the Pope's recent speeches on the necessary for change in the Church has run into a brick wall with many people. But I think if you read this book, you might think about it a little more deeply. There are 5 sections to the book, and they're all about coming and going. He talks about the coming and going of Latin, the coming and going of monarchy, the coming and going of anti-Semitism, the coming and going of natural law, which is a big point for me, and the coming and going of confession. Just to take the last point, it's true, I can remember as a kid, Saturday, Catholic churches were filled with people going to confession. They had afternoon sessions and evening. You don't see that anymore. In many churches, the confessional box is used for storage. And I hadn't thought of it, you know, but reading this book, I thought, yeah, that's right. And the coming and going of Latin with the Second Vatican Council, encouraging people to use Latin. And he explains in here why that makes perfect sense. The church's allegiance with monarchy, we still can't get over that because church leaders tend to flock to people in political power and form close alliances with them, and that maybe shouldn't be the focus. And then the coming and going of anti-Semitism. He talks about the terrible, terrible blemish, well, more than a blemish, it's a grave fault in Christianity, for its promotion of anti-Semitism through the centuries. And it is so deeply ingrained that it still pops up here and there. And the church's role in that and how the church finally came to terms with this, that they had to get over this, that they were guilty of something really serious. Then the coming and going of the natural law. The natural law has always impressed me as being kind of oh, I don't know. I don't want to say made up, but the natural law is what, technically, it's what any reasonable person would assume to be is proper. If we followed the natural law, we wouldn't be wearing clothes. There were a lot of things that we do that violate the what you might call the natural law all the time. And his writing on that is some of the most insightful stuff in the book. But I think, you know, obviously this is something of relatively narrow interest to Catholicism, but it is a book that I think all Catholics would benefit from reading, including those who are really opposed to the Pope. There's a conservative faction that doesn't want anything to change, and he points out through the book that everything changes, and the Church has changed dramatically over 2,000 years. It actually didn't get organized into anything approaching the Church that we know until about the 3rd or 4th century. And even that, it kept developing in surprising ways and changing its rules and so on.
The problem, it seems to me, with change is, you know, there's change depending on which way the wind is blowing, and then there's change that's growth. And it's yeah. very hard at the moment to decide which is which, right?
That's true. And, you know, you get comfortable. You really do get comfortable in a set of practices and beliefs, whether it's in religion or anything else. And all of a sudden, someone comes up with a change, and your immediate reaction is, no, that is a change. And then you stop and think, yeah, but that makes sense. But stopping to think that, to question whether or not a change makes sense, is logical, follows some kind of tradition in a way that you hadn't thought of, that's kind of hard to do, isn't it?
I think it's very hard to decide.
Yeah, it is. And you can see why there's such a ferment right now, that there are, particularly in the Curia, there's some very traditional people there who don't want anything to change. But that's a place where some change really has to take place, if the Church is to move in a direction that'll make it relevant. And it's hard to think, you know, that we like to assume that the Church has always been the same and will always be relevant because of that, but that is not true. So anyway, it's Yeri Will's book, The Future of the Catholic Church with Pope Francis. If that is a subject that is of interest to you, I think you will find this book really quite interesting. It was published, as I say, back in 2015, but I don't imagine it has disappeared, because the books by Yeri Will on almost any subject that he chooses to address seem to remain in print and popular. And I'm fairly sure you'll find a copy of it if you'd like to look into this. And it is a subject, I think, that is fascinating. But that'll do it for now. I'm Don Wooten, gabbling away here with my friend Roel Tweet. We'll be back next week for another session of Scribble, and hope that you will join us.